This is The State of Things. I'm Anita Rao. What are the limits of your human body? It's made up of skin, bones, hair, and cells. But then science and biotechnology enter the picture, and they create a whole new slew of possibilities. My guest today is an artist who's fascinated by the body's boundaries. This curiosity led her to collaborate with scientists to duplicate the most essentially human parts of herself. She extracted cells from her own colon and made them cancerous for display. Most recently, she's using stem cell research and genetic engineering to create the world's first female semen. That's right. You heard that correct. Female semen. It's on display now at the Gregg Museum at North Carolina State University as part of the ongoing exhibition Art's Work in the Age of Biotechnology. Charlotte Jarvis is an artist and lecturer at Goldsmiths College and the Royal College of Art in London, and she joins me as part of Embodied, our series of conversations about sex, relationships, and your health. Charlotte, welcome to North Carolina and to The State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll get to this semen in a second, but I want to start by getting a bit of a sense of you and how you think. So tell me what first got you interested in looking at the human body and exploring its limits through art.
Sure. Going way back, when I was at school, I did all the sciences and I also did art, and I very nearly became a doctor. So I was deciding between doing medicine and doing fine art. My parents were obviously much more interested in me doing medicine than doing art, which is probably why I chose the art. And I think kind of always had an interest in science. I've always been really inspired by science. I've always kind of found that to be a place for wonder, I guess, which I'm really interested in, and terror as well, wonder and terror. And I think more broadly as an artist, I'm interested in the big existential questions, right? Like, I'm interested in death and life and what is a human body and can we define it and should we try? And in my perspective of it, I think the place where those questions are being asked in a really vital, rigorous, and exciting way is in the sciences. So I kind of think, I get asked a lot, you know, why are you interested in working with scientists? And I kind of like to turn that around and be like, I think it would be incredibly weird if artists were not interested in engaging with this stuff. Because it is asking these questions that artists have asked for centuries, right?
Who am I and where do I come from and what are the boundaries of existence?
Exactly.
So as you're thinking about that, what drew you to looking at gender specifically, which kind of takes us to this question of sperm?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a feminist. I became a feminist when I was a student. So that's some time ago now, when I was 19. I'm now 35. And I think just broadly, I'm really interested in how we define ourselves. And obviously, traditionally, gender is pretty much the first way that we define somebody. You know, it's the first thing you ask about a baby, right? Is it a boy or is it a girl? And I think increasingly that definition is being tested and is being perceived of as perhaps much less relevant than what perhaps we thought it was. And I certainly feel that. And I feel that through feminist readings, but also through my lived experience and through my friends and my family. So I was really interested in making something that started to look at those definitions and perhaps breaking them down a little bit.
Well, feminists have long been interested in this question of, you know, what inherently gives something power and what doesn't. And Gloria Steinem wrote this famous essay in the 1970s, I think, called If Men Could Menstruate, kind of looking at if men could menstruate, what are all of the things that we would have in our society that would create space for that, that would give them certain benefits, that would, make it this really special time where they didn't have to go to work. Mm. So this is this question of power and which pieces of our biology give us power is a long running question in feminism. So for you, what led you to choose semen in particular, and tell us about this art project that you're working on now?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm kind of interested in the magical substances, right? And I would say that, blood is a magical substance, a great example of that. But semen as a symbol, I suppose, as a totem of literal, but also symbolic potency, I find fascinating. And, you know, throughout our history, which is predominantly patriarchal, semen has really been revered as this magical substance. So it's been described as being divine or equal to 10 drops of blood, or my absolute favourite is an English philosopher who said that semen was that which sows the seeds of virtue in the female soul. I mean, please deliver me from this. So I'm interested in how we can use art and science to break down some of these symbols, right? To actually break down that hierarchy. And I'm really interested in how science and particularly science and art together can be a kind of performative act. And I mean that in the sense of performative things having power just by the virtue of being said or existing. So once, you know, you take this symbol of specifically male power and patriarchy, if you then just by virtue of a woman possessing that, you take away its power. Like you just change the game. You break it down completely. And I'm much more interested in that than I am in, say, thinking of the project as a kind of future utopia or a dystopia, depending on your opinion, you know, in which women don't need men or something like that. Like that doesn't really interest me. The bit that really interests me is the idea of it as a piece of activism and as something that references that patriarchal history and questions, you know, what would it have been like if we hadn't lived through all those patriarchies? You know, yeah, what would medicine be like? What would our society be like? You know, I feel this so keenly at the age I am as well, because, you know, I'm 35. I'm obviously thinking about whether or not I want to have children. Pretty much all my friends have just had kids or having their second kids. And there's so much that you discover is still so gendered when you get into that area and when people start having children. And it comes as almost a shock, which is a ridiculous thing to say, but it does come as a shock when you suddenly see it and you see how all those inequalities. And if you think, if I'm experiencing those inequalities, you know, as a really deeply privileged white woman, imagine that for
you know, they're playing out
for other people. I mean,
so how do you as an artist get a scientist on board with this kind of project? What is the scientific rationale behind wanting to create female semen?
Sure. So in the first instance, it's about finding the right person. So for quite some time, I've been asking the scientists that I know who I've worked with in the past, you know, I would really like to make semen, female semen, who should I be talking to? And for the majority of that time, for the last 4 years or so, the answer has been it's not possible for some quite fundamental scientific reasons. And then suddenly about a year and a half ago, that answer changed. And one of the scientists that I'd collaborated with in the past said, do you know what, actually, you should speak to this amazing woman, Professor Lopez, who is literally in the lab opposite mine, like over the corridor. And she works in the anatomy and embryology department. She looks at how the sex cells, sperm and eggs, are developed in the fetus. So you are obviously looking at stem cells to sex cells there. And she's also really interested in where you have kind of chromosomal difference to your phenotypical gender. So where you might present as being a woman and you might have ovaries and a womb and all of the things that we might associate with women in inverted commas. But actually you have XY chromosomes. And the reverse. So this was suddenly like absolutely smack bang in the middle of her research, right? So I Skyped her. We had a Skype conversation. And usually there is a long process of then writing back and forward and me kind of, it's almost like flirting, you know, it's like me going, you know, well, would you maybe like to do a project with me? And here are the other projects I've made. And in this case, you know, Susanna had to, she only had 20 minutes. She had to go and she was like, so we're going to make the project? Yeah, and that
was
it.
Wow,
yeah.
So on board right away.
Yeah, absolutely on board right away. And then after that, you start to, you know, then you start to like really develop how you want that project to evolve and how you're going to work together and what that relationship's going to be. So for us in this project, Susanna's part is actually just one third of what the whole project is going to be. So her part is probably the trickiest bit, granted, that is going from my stem cells to hopefully functioning spermatoza. Susanna, as a research project, as a science project, Susanna just got a really big grant called the Vici Grant in the Netherlands to make this project. And to do that, she obviously has to present the scientific benefit of making female sperm. The first one is not so much as an end result, but through the process is learning actually about male infertility. So often in science, you do the opposite in order to reveal the kind of black box that you're trying to open or uncover. So if you imagine that every time in our project where we fail, every time where there's a barrier, you have just learned one of the things that you need to make sperm in the wild as it is, right? So that's the kind of first application. And then if we get to a point where we have fully functioning spermatozoas, you would then be looking at a process where you say, going through a lot of ethical approval to do this, you know, could it actually fertilize an egg? And if you can do that, then potentially you've just opened up fertility treatments for same-sex couples, which is also a really beautiful application, I think, of the project. And obviously, while we're doing this, Susanna will also be trying to do it with male stem cells to eggs.
Okay.
I mean, that's not the focus for her, but, you know, if you're going to try one way, you really might as well try the other way. And obviously, again, if you're looking at potentially helping same-sex couples to have children, then you don't want to restrict that just to women.
So there's a lot of really complicated science that's happening at her level of kind of taking these double X sex cells and turning them into an X and a Y. Now this part is the artistic creation, the artistic infrastructure around all of this. So what is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is this Festival of Thesmophoria. So I really wanted to find a way to present the project that was placed it in the context of the history that I've spoken about. And that didn't very specifically make it into a kind of science fiction project. So not a speculative project, but actually something that, as I said, was more about the kind of texture of history and patriarchy and groups of women and what has happened within that history. So, and I also really wanted to find something that was joyous. Like I wanted this to be a celebration. You know, I didn't want a kind of, you know, my previous project about cancer, it was incredibly still, incredibly quiet and pretty terrifying, actually. And I wanted something that was the exact opposite, that was an ejaculation, you know, in the joyous sense of that word. So I wanted to find a way of kind of celebrating making this female semen. And I thought that some kind of ritual event involving women that was kind of intrinsic to how I make the female semen would be apt. And so I went looking basically for what could I do, what would kind of appropriate rituals be. And I read about this, it's an amazing mystery, it's so kind of compelling, that the biggest festival in the whole of ancient Greece, most number of people over the widest area, is this Festival of Thesmophoria. And it was a fertility festival in honor of Demeter and Persephone. And it was women only. Men were not allowed to know what happened in the festival. And because of that, it is completely undocumented. So we have no idea what happened. You know, there are a few rumors and a few kind of really tantalizing bits and bobs. And there is a play, one of the Greek comedies. But that is very much written of the basis of men trying to sneakily find out what happened in the Thesmophoria. So it just seemed so perfect, right? This thing that, because of our patriarchy, remains a mystery, but which is also this great celebration and is a space where women and trans and gender non-binary people, basically people who are oppressed by patriarchy, could go and celebrate, I guess, and bring this thing into existence. So what I do is, in order to make the female semen, the kind of the gooey part, the seminal plasma, is a recipe. Effectively, it's a bit like cooking. You put together a load of different chemicals and you come out with something approaching semen at the end. And one of those ingredients we derive from blood. It's blood plasma. And I can do that with the blood of multiple women. So it becomes collective seminal plasma. Instead of just being one woman's semen, it's women's semen. And that donation forms a big part of what we do in the Thesmophoria. But then the actual details of the rituals and the rites, I leave to the group of women to decide. So that's really what that workshop is that we spend about 3 days deciding together what we want our Thesmophoria to be in that time with those groups of women. And they decide how much they want to share. So how much do they want to let other people know about it? You know, how do they want me to document it? What do they want to retain as being a secret and a mystery?
And so you've done two of these so far. Tell me what you can about what happened. And if you can paint a picture, because we've taken our listeners on a big journey during this segment. So if you can paint a picture of what happened or in as much as you feel comfortable sharing.
Sure, absolutely. So all the women arrived and I prepared a feast for them. So one of the things we do know happened in the Thesmophoria was that there was a seed feast, which couldn't be more apt for female semen. So I prepared this feast. They all arrived and we started by trying to write a manifesto of what we wanted our Thesmophoria to be. And then we spent 2 or 3 days like locked in the gallery, sleeping there, eating there, cooking there, the whole lot, creating what we wanted this ritual to be. So effectively workshopping what the ritual was going to be, making things. Obviously, we did the blood donation. We spent some time in the lab. The gallery has a lab, so we were kind of mixing up the seminal plasma there. We were looking after my cells as well because they have to be kept at body temperature. So whenever you take them out of the incubator, you have to kind of put them under your armpit to keep them at the right temperature. And all of this was building up towards leaving the gallery, finally, breaking out, and going into the woods in Slovenia. And the kind of apex, the climax of the festival, where we actually put all those ingredients together and made the seminal plasma, was in the woods. And I cannot tell you what we did in the woods, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Some of the more explicit material, they said that they wanted it to be documented, but they only wanted the next group of women who do the Thesmophoria for them to be the only people that could see it. And I thought that was a beautiful idea. So off the back of that, I think what I'm going to create is a book or a box or something which is added to by each group of women, and there'll be multiple over the course of the project, and it gets passed to the next, and those are the only people who get to see that part of the documentation, which I think is really beautiful.
And what is kind of your final vision for this? Is it going to be a major worldwide revolution of thesmophorias everywhere? Or
yes.
Do you see this?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we've done the one in Slovenia. The next one's going to be in the Netherlands. And I'm trying to set up perhaps a really big all bells and whistles one in Greece. I would really like to do that. And the idea is that these thesmophoria kind of chart the project as it evolves. So I'm at the very beginning of that piece of scientific research. So myself and Susanna, we have this grant. There's 5 other people who are going to be working on it. And that's a 5-year research grant. And I'm in year one, right? So right now we're like on the bottom of the ladder that starts with stem cells and ends with spermatoza. And each time we go up the ladder one run, then I want to do a thesmophoria, which will celebrate going up the ladder one run. And then so hopefully over the whole course of the project, many, many thesmophorias will come together to kind of chart the evolution of the project and to effectively kind of herald in this this magical substance. Yeah.
How have people reacted to your project so far, especially those who make semen themselves?
A lot of my male friends have talked about how it actually feels to them like a castration. And I think that's really interesting because it's not. You know, I'm not taking anything away at all from men. All I'm doing is saying that women could potentially have this symbol too. And what is fascinating and I think so revealing about it as a symbol is that when you think of the opposite, you know, if you say to women, how would you feel if men had eggs and men could have babies? In general, the women that I've spoken to have gone, sign me up.
Like, let them, you know, carry the babies.
Yeah, exactly. Like absolutely. Like women seem really open to the idea of sharing those roles. But then when you present it to men, not all men, but you know, a lot of men, when they've really got to it, have said, you know, I don't know why, but it does feel like a castration. And I think that just tells you so much, or it's so demonstrative about how hierarchies work, right? You know, you can deny the hierarchy, but when emotionally you have that response, it's because your privilege is being taken away, right?
Well, I can't wait for us to follow your project and see how it all turns out. Charlotte Jarvis is an artist and lecturer at Goldsmiths College and the Royal College of Art in London. Her work is on display at the Gregg Museum at North Carolina State University until March 15th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been such a delight.
You can find more about the entire Embodied series and see photos of everything we talked about today at our website, stateofthings.org.